Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to enter into the world of the paranormal. Of ghosts, UFOs, demons, Bigfoot, and generally anything unexplained. We live in a diverse world where we don't fully understand everything that happens around us. These are the topics that we are discussing on Paranormal Horizons. Stay tuned with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang, as we look a little deeper into the world of the paranormal. Paranormal Horizons begins now. Hello, everybody in Internet land. I'm Jason Ophir, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. And here with me always every week is Sherry Pang. Sherry, hello.
Hey, how's it going, Jason?
It's going. Another week down, and unfortunately it's Monday. Have to return back to the working world. How was your week?
Very good. It's just been really, I've just been kind of staying home and just kind of regrouping and just getting ready for different things. But, you know, it's life is good, and yes, I've been very blessed, and God is on my side, and I feel very, very blessed in my life. So what about you, Jason? What have you been up to other than staying home?
Not much. It's been really uneventful. I my weekends are lazy. I like to sleep on the weekends, so, because I work so late during the week, but nothing really going on. I've kind of poked around a little bit in the paranormal, but I haven't seen anything that's worth reporting out there. I saw some stuff about, you know, how NASA has the live feed from space, and I saw some stuff. It seems like anytime objects fly in front of the camera, I don't know, I guess it's on the ISS, that they cut the feed, so I watched some videos of that. But other than that, you know, not a whole lot going on. It's been uneventful.
Wow. Well, I'm excited for the return of our next guest tonight. His name is Brian Ouellette, and he is a demonologist, and a paranormal investigator. And, you know, instead of having a subject, Brian and I, we talked about it. We're just going to have open lines or just talk about generally whatever comes up in the paranormal. We're not going to focus on the last two times we focused on a subject. So if something comes up and you're interested in asking him, the guy is just well-versed and just really enjoy his energy. So we're going to bring him on. Is he on cue?
He sure is. So if anybody wants to call in.
Okay, we'll just bring him on.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to call in, they can call 215-383-3999. That's 215-383-3999. And I'll bring him on right now.
How you
Brian,
doing?
You there?
It's good to be
good,
back.
How are you?
Yes, I am. I'm doing well.
Hi,
I'm doing
Brian.
Well. Thank you, Jason.
Always a pleasure to have you. Just really, you know your stuff, and it's you got good energy, and I love having you back.
I appreciate that. It's good to be back.
Good. So we're just going to wait. Whatever comes through, we have any questions or, you know, something we talk about, that would be fine. I'm pretty flexible, and it feels like you are too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many directions that we can go in the subject of my area of work. And, I mean, we see all sorts of different things with our clients, and it's more than just demons out there. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting area with a lot of diversity to explore.
Yes, very much so. So anyway, let's kind of figure out what we're going to talk about. Jason, do you have any questions or anything you want to talk about, or Brian?
Well, I know we've probably discussed demonology. I find it fascinating, but I mean, we can go any direction we want. You know, any notable investigations, anything like that? Maybe we haven't talked about before.
Okay, and I gotta share this story with you. I was in a fair a couple weeks ago, and I had this gentleman come up to me, and he was referred to me because he says that I can take curses away and remove any dark entities. And when he sat down, he said, I've been through six of these so-called intuitives or psychic mediums. He says, what do you see? And I said, I see a dark entity. He says, how many of them? And I said, I see three of them. I said, one's the one that's right on your back, and the other two are kind of like, I call them henchmen. They were kind of in the background, but they weren't visibly up there, you know, towards his body. So I says, oh, definitely. And he goes, well, I would like you to take away my curse, and I would like you to get this dark entity off. And I says, I don't do that. I'm sorry. I'm not going to go there. And even if I did, I don't want to go and bring it home, you know, bring it home or take a chance. I said, I am not experienced in that arena. And I would like you to go and talk to somebody locally. I will refer you and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, something told me, don't take on this project that I wasn't, not even, well, let alone experienced, but prepared to deal with. So I think I did the right thing, Brian, right?
Yeah, I would say you did. I mean, I think a lot of people out there kind of get into paranormal investigation or just generally, you know, interested in the exploration of the paranormal or the occult. And then once they really get their feet wet, if they take it seriously and they start to really investigate genuine cases of paranormal disturbances, they'll soon find themselves in over their head with people that are genuinely plagued with spiritual dilemmas or what we call spiritual crises. And so that is really how our church developed a spiritual crisis ministry that turned into our primary outreach, where now we explore and investigate claims of paranormal disturbances, mostly of a demonic nature. But, you know, we don't just handle demonic disturbances. We investigate all various claims of the paranormal. And then we draft a solution, and then we work with that client towards a resolution. But
right, and I gave them the information. You know, I told them in the meantime, you can get this, that, everything else. But you really need to seek somebody like you. You know, somebody like you and or a shaman that is known to do curses, get curses off of people, whether it's generational or something that was plagued on him. I got a feeling there was a connection, and I wanted to say this: that feeling I got as a psychic medium was there was something that was connected with his wife. And it's either her friends or somebody she's associated with who had been cursed to him. And that's what I felt. Now, this entity, I feel, he picked up somewhere, and that's what I really feel. I feel like this entity that is latched onto him, he picked up. And I said, do you feel, and I asked him, I said, do you feel that there's something on you? He said, absolutely. He said, you're the only one out of seven people that I saw feels that I had something on me. I said, definitely. I can tell you where he's at. I can tell you. But I don't want to, you know, deal with him. I really don't. And I didn't want to be honest with you, Brian, I didn't want to look at him. I can tell,
yeah,
you know, from peripherally, I could tell it was there, but I didn't want to look at that entity dead on like I wanted to challenge him. You understand what I'm saying?
I do. And that was,
and
you
know,
that's kind of
basically
the...
told him, you need to, and he was kind of like, he didn't want to leave. He knew that I knew, you know, and he felt comfort knowing that I knew what he felt. But I had to push him away, you know, push him along, because he would have stayed there for another half an hour if I would have let him. So, you know, I gave him the tools. Hopefully he's going to be looking for something to help resolve the issue. So, but, yes, I didn't want to look at that thing directly and challenge it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely takes somebody with, you know, that has some experience in the removal of these types of things. I mean, everything from a curse all the way to what would be, you know, a full-blown demonic possession is a type of spirit attachment. It all falls under the umbrella of spirit attachment. And the key to resolving these types of things is knowing specifically what type of attachment is taking place, what type of spiritual energy is attached to that individual, and then going after the spirit attachment itself and breaking it, removing it from the person. And in most cases, it's actually a very simple matter. It's only when it gets to an integration point within that client's, or I should say that victim's persona, when it actually integrates into their psychology, that becomes a long-term issue that can take several weeks to several months, even sometimes in most severe cases, several years to resolve. But
so
most,
Brian,
people don't
can
fall
you
into
do
that
this
category.
Over the phone? Let me ask you, can that something like this, is that should be done in person, or can it be done over the phone? Or remotely,
it should,
I should
always
say.
Always and only be done in person. Anybody that claims it can be done over the phone is really towing a line of fraud, in my opinion, because, you know, well, certainly we can pray for people on a remote distance, and we can intercede for them spiritually by appealing to God, or, you know, in my tradition, which is Catholic, you know, we can appeal to the intercession of the saints and ask them to pray for us and pray with us to God for a person to be delivered. But, and that helps, and I'm not trying to marginalize how important that type of prayer is. But if you're talking about actually conducting a spiritual resolution that would involve any form of deliverance, any form of exorcism, it is really no different than a sacrament. And as any Catholic priest will tell you, a sacrament must involve physical connection between the person that confers it, which is usually the priest, and the recipient, which is the person seeking the grace. And if that physical connection is not there, then you're really not performing a deliverance. You're not really breaking it. And I've heard of people that try to perform exorcisms over the internet. There's some guy that even charges to do it. And this is all absolute rubbish. And it's dangerous, particularly since it doesn't generally involve an accurate assessment process, which is also necessary. Because if you're just going at it to say, okay, everything's a demon and we're going to exorcise everybody that comes through our doors, then you're missing the point, because not everything is a fallen angel, you know. And we talked about that last time on this show, where we talked about the four types of demons, and that only one of the four actually qualifies as a genuine Judeo-Christian demon, which would be a fallen angel or something that would be of the satanic nature. But, you know, the majority of things that cause spiritual illness are not fallen angels. There are actually other types of spiritual maladies that involve spiritual energy. But just like, you know, it would not be advisable to call up a doctor on the phone and say, hey, can you cure me of cancer? You know, that's not going to work. You're going to have to go in to and visit him and receive procedures that require a physical connection from doctor to patient. It's no different with the spiritual resolution process.
That makes sense. Thank you for clarifying that for our listeners. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
What do you think of
curses? My pleasure.
Can I ask you that?
Well, I mean, we see that a lot. Actually, I was working on a case, a really high-profile case that you guys might have an opportunity to see. I was called to by the Ghost Adventures team that is on Travel Channel with Zach Bagans, and some of your audience might be familiar with that show. And, you know, he goes in and they go in and they explore all sorts of haunted locations. But every now and then they come across something that is more of the demonic. And this was a particular family. And I don't want to talk too much about it because it's, you know, the show hasn't aired yet. It's going to probably air in May. But it pretty much involves something of a cursed nature. And so when you are dealing with something that is cursed, you have to identify the type of energy that is being utilized, or I should say conjured, for the purposes of inflicting the curse on a person. In most cases, most dark practitioners of the occult are not very skilled, fortunately. And so most curses that they're able to generate are very weak, although the victims don't feel that way because they can have remarkable effects on the person's physical and spiritual, emotional and psychological health. But that being said, they are able they're able to be broken very easily once you go to the right person and you're able to identify the issue. In most cases, what it is, if you recall from our last conversation, most of it is associated with a created demon, or what we classify in that third category of demons, which are called the created. And that's
the created, right? Okay, I remember that.
Correct. Yeah, you remember? I mean, that's the conjured type of demon, and these are thought forms. These are using ritual and using various practices of the occult. These are thought forms that are generated out of the malevolent energy of the practitioner, and they are projected onto a target, which is usually the intended victim, or it could be projected into an object for the purposes of inflicting a person in something that might appear very much benign, which was the case that I was called on this month, in fact. And that involves, eventually it involves an exorcism in most cases, which will break the demonic energy. And then at that point, you can absorb it and destroy it, you know, through a process of what I call, or like to call, retro integration. It's sort of taking the matrix of that spiritual process and then imprinting your own over it, so that it's sort of, think of it as like a computer file. Let's think, you know, pretend you have a virus on your computer. Well, it's sort of like isolating the program that is the virus and then rewriting it with a healthy code so that it no longer infects your computer. It's almost identical, only this is done on a spiritual level. So, you know, I think we talked about before, you know, in exorcism, the idea of casting out demons is sort of a misnomer. We're really not casting them out. A genuine exorcist is breaking a connection of spiritual energy that is attached to an individual. Sometimes it's, sometimes it's just an unfortunate reaction of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Sometimes it's because they have been targeted by a practitioner of dark magic or dark witchcraft or Satanism even. And, you know, it could be a multitude of reasons where these curses could come from, but they always involve breaking the connection first and then taking that energy and then overriding it with a more wholesome matrix. And then that dissolves it. It's really a very simple process. And it's only when you are dealing with fallen angels, genuine fallen angels in the genuine Judeo-Christian context, that it can become very tricky and a lengthy process.
So I noticed we do have a caller. Do you want to take a caller real quick? We've been on hold for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead.
All right. Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. How are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Canada.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Do you have any questions or input?
Yeah, I do, actually. So my wife is a practicing clairvoyant. She's a medium as well. We're also both Christians. I was raised a Catholic. So I was listening to your speaker. You said you were raised Catholic?
Oh, I'm actually a Catholic bishop, but I'm in the independent sacramental movement now. I mean, I was a seminarian in the Roman Catholic Church, but eventually, through the course of the development of my ministry, eventually found myself in an autocephalous operation at that point. Yeah.
Okay, I see. So I missed the first part, so I didn't really get all your background. So I guess my question was, it would seem I'm also a fan of like Dr. Father Malachi Martin.
Yeah,
I know he's since passed, but he was, you know, heavily involved in exorcisms. My wife was a youth pastor, and she was involved with some exorcisms in South Africa as a youth pastor. So I guess my question is, it always seemed to me that, you know, exorcisms are always have to be affiliated with the Catholic Church. I don't necessarily believe that where the Catholic Church has to mandate it. And of course, I understand there's some things that have to go on, like it has to be validated that, you know, they feel that it's actually an exorcism, and course the exorcism has to be ordered. So how does it work outside of the Catholic Church? Because really it's a religion, it's an institution, it's a hierarchy like anything else. Because I think for me, it really, as a person, I don't think for me personally, it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, the Catholic Church, and it has everything to just do with God. And for you to be able to, you know, do God's work through God's word in order to remove, you know, the negative entity, or you know, deal with the possession. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a good question, and it actually is a reflection of how I ended up in the independent sacramental movement. Because part of the reason I'm here is because of the red tape of the Roman Catholic Church, and being able to really help people on a spiritual level. I mean, you're absolutely right. The Roman Catholic Church has a very formal process for getting an exorcism approved. In fact, you know, the restrictions on it are so severe that most people who need the kind of help of an exorcist are never able to get it, because only the most extreme cases are generally recognized and seen, and there are so few exorcists in the Roman Catholic Church that are available that, you know, in a lot of cases it doesn't get handled as quickly or efficiently or as pervasively as it would need to be. So, you know, in the independent sacramental movement, we have full valid apostolic succession, which means all of our sacramental offices are fully valid and are a reflection of that apostolic authority that goes all the way back through the apostolic chain of the Roman Catholic Church. But the difference is we don't have to get anything approved by the Vatican, because we're not under their canons. And that gives us a lot of freedom to be able to go out there and help anybody who needs it, not just Roman Catholics, not just people who are part of our communion, but anybody that comes to us for help. We do our best to try to help them. Now, as far as exorcism being something that is exclusive to the Roman Catholic Church, I think what it really is that the Roman Catholic Church has the most formal process in place. They have a great deal of experience with working these cases. That's the positive side. So generally speaking, if you are able to get a Roman Catholic exorcist, you're going to have at least somebody that is very qualified to assist you with the problem. But that's a big if. That's a big if you can even get in touch with one or if you can even get one approved to the point that you would have the ability to be ministered by an exorcist. So our process, which is through the Order of Exorcists, the Sacred Order of St. Michael the Archangel, which is an international organization under the old Roman Catholic Church, which is, again, under its own canons. It's not under the Vatican. Allows us to see anybody. And so it doesn't matter if they are our clients, doesn't matter if they're Christian, it doesn't matter what denomination of Christian they are, if they are Christian. I mean, I'm actually working a case right now with a Muslim family. And, you know, people come to Catholic priests because I think the perception is, well, they must know something about exorcism because, well, let's face it, the pop culture and movies and everything else, if there's an exorcism movie, and there's a whole subgenre of horror now on exorcism, you know, in possession films. It's almost always a Roman Catholic priest that's involved in the movie. So that creates a perception. That creates an archetype. And so you're going to see that. So I would say the only real advantage that you're going to get out of a Catholic, whether they be Roman Catholic or whether they be independent Catholic like myself, the only advantage is you're going to be getting someone who's extremely trained, extremely skilled in it, that has that's been validated by the processes in place by the church. But also, we have a very powerful methodology for resolving these issues that is very ancient and very successful. Whereas some of the other ministries that are out there that are not Catholic don't have access to these rites, don't have access to this information that isn't passed on outside of the you know, the clerical chambers of the church, and so that's going to be more limiting with what they do, and some people will make stuff up as they go along. But I mean, you know, if you're looking even at the occult, if you're looking at just practitioners of the occult in general, like ceremonial magicians, for example, there's protocols in place for when you are engaging in conjuration. I'm not suggesting that anyone do this, but there are protocols in place for people who are trained to conjure demons of how to deal with them if one of them were to escape and get out of hand. So if you're talking about people who are part of a mystery school or a mystery tradition where ceremonial magic is part of the process, they too are also very skilled at being able to capture and control demons and eradicate them when necessary. The thing is, they don't generally offer their services to the public like a minister would or a priest. But there are many systems. Even Buddhism has a form of exorcism that is very useful. Islam has exorcism. Even Judaism has exorcism, although it's more rare there. You know, so this is a pervasive pattern. All across religions around the world, the idea of having to deal with evil entities or evil spiritual forces is something that is inherent in most religions. And most religions have some type of system in place for being able to deal with it. And my personal opinion, having been someone who has studied multiple religions, is a bit of a syncretist in terms of theology and trying to understand where all the religions come together and relate. I feel personally, and it's not just my bias as a Catholic bishop, but I personally feel that the Catholic, particularly the Roman Catholic formula of exorcism, is the most powerful, the most successful, and the most expeditious methodology that is in place. And so I would feel that if anybody really genuinely feels that they have a demonic issue, I would strongly suggest that they seek out a Catholic priest, just because that rite is just that powerful. But that's not to say that someone else couldn't help them. It's just at that point, because there's less formality in the other systems, you're really at the mercy of the person's word. And maybe they're telling you the truth and maybe they're not. But if you're going to us in the Order of Exorcists, you're dealing with people who have been ordained to this ministry. We have been commissioned to this ministry, and we know what we're doing. And so there's, you know, there's a bit of good and bad either way, but I wouldn't say, you know, spiritual problem resolution is something that's exclusive to the Catholic Church. No, I mean, any religion should have that in place in some form or fashion.
Okay. I have one more question or comment, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a lot of really great information. And I guess maybe this just comes more from my perception. Although I was brought up a Catholic, I no longer, you know, go to church every Sunday. I kind of have my own relationship with God. So I consider myself more of a Christian outside of, you know, conventional religion. Because for me, at least this is just a personal thing. I think religion is really man, and man, you know, tends to taint things quite a bit. When I think about the Catholic Church, at least this is my perception. Do you find, in your opinion, because you have a Catholic background, you were a bishop as well, do you find that the Catholic Church, like if I was to walk down locally and try to speak to 10 Catholic, you know, working Catholic priests, do you feel that, are they really not acknowledging the evil that exists in the world? You know, in the conventional sense, we could say, you know, we have God and we have the devil. We have good and we have evil. So do you feel that if I was to approach a Catholic priest, just generally speaking, and I was to, you know, bring up the topic of exorcism, at least it's my perception that today, you know, they're not going to, I don't think they're going to take it very seriously. And I do acknowledge that it exists, and, you know, there's manifestation, there's, you know, perfect possession and that type of thing. I think today for me, at least, it's almost like they're more preaching lukewarm Christianity, because if you're preaching Christianity, you know, there's that acknowledgement there is a dark force, there is an evil, there is a Lucifer, there is a Satan. At least for me personally, I think that, you know, they're talking way less about that when really it should be a big part of what they're talking about. I've explained that correctly.
Yeah, I think I'm understanding where you're going with it. And I think the answer to your question is, you know, if you were to talk to a random sampling of Catholic priests, what type of reactions would you get? And I think it would be very much dependent upon how theologically liberal or conservative they are. There are some Roman Catholic priests or even independent Catholics, even in the independent movement. There is a very liberal branch of it. There is a very conservative branch. The conservative branches tend to be more traditional, and their understanding of Satan is more in line with what is more conventional to the Christian religion. So the idea that Satan is a real living entity, a fallen angel that is part of the creation, that decided to disobey God and has the power of an angel and therefore is able to inflict harm upon God's creation through his disobedience. I think you're going to find that anybody that has adopted the more conservative theology, whether they are Roman Catholic or independent Catholic, is going to very much agree that if you were to ask them, is the devil real, they'll tell you absolutely he is. But there's also a liberal branch, just like we have in politics. You know, you have the conservative people in politics, you have very liberal people, and we're more polarized today than ever, I think, you know, at least in a very long time. And this is happening religiously, too. And so I have met some Catholic priests, I would say even my own mentor, the person who pretty much taught me everything there is to know about priesthood, didn't believe in Satan. And yet here I am as an exorcist. You know, I mean, certainly Satan is a reality to me. I've seen him. I have worked to fight him for years now in this ministry. I have seen the harm that he does. And there is no question in my mind that Satan is a very real spiritual force that can wreak havoc on people's lives and can put our salvation at risk. But yes, I mean, there's liberals in the church that would say it's a psychological phenomenon. There's some that would say it's all just the result of our human evolution, and that this is a carryover from when we were more animal-like, and so we have this beastly carryover in our genes, and it just evolution hasn't taken it out yet. And you know, I think the reality is there's a little bit somewhere in between there, you know, because While there is absolutely a spiritual entity, in my opinion, that is called Satan, that is very real and is not a metaphor for anything else, he does affect us and inflict us through the vehicle of our human frailty. And so our own proclivity towards sin, the flaws that are built within us as far as, our emotional flaws, our spiritual unsophistication is a weakness that can be exploited by demonic forces. And so, therefore, when you see someone who's genuinely possessed, almost every single time, in fact, I would say every single time that I have seen genuine demonic attachment, there has always been a comorbidity with psychological and emotional illness. And so they always go hand in hand. And so if you're more of the liberal, it really is. But if you're more of the more liberal side of things, then you're only going to look at the mental illness. You're not going to see that there's a spiritual component here. But if you're looking at it from a more conservative vantage point, you're going to understand that this is how the devil affects us. He affects us through our own weaknesses because the devil has no power of his own. That's the thing.
That's right.
He has the cunningness of an angel. But he can only work through our sin. He cannot do anything else. And everything that the devil does is permitted under the will of God also. So
it's interesting it's really interesting how you explained it through liberal, conservative, and that gives me a better understanding. And, my wife and I talk about this from time to time, and, really, God has given us free will, but the devil will use every trick in the book. And, when you referred to, liberals, not necessarily, they won't say, okay, let's talk openly about Satan, where they're less about, acknowledging it. And if you think about that for what it is, it's even you mentioned your mentor, the person that, taught you from the ground up. Yet there's no real acknowledgement like there should be. And in a way, that's how he is, that's how the dark one has, led us astray, where you have, someone who's teaching you, during your young priesthood. And even that person is not acknowledging that, that dark force, Satan as per se, like, really, I think it should be.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, it is a problem and it's causing a schism, a new schism within the church, because it's becoming very much polarized and divided, just like we're seeing right now in American politics. I'm sure that's
absolutely.
News right now. And that polarity is a reflection of what's happening on a more spiritual level and a higher level. When the world is in crisis, I can guarantee you that that's when the reality of spiritual warfare is at its strongest. And so we reflect, we react subconsciously to the spiritual climate. And so when people are more volatile, when we become more aggressive, when war becomes more of a possibility, maybe even a probability, that always has a spiritual counterpart that's causing it. And we're sort of, victims of that spiritual climate. And again, our human weakness is what empowers it to a certain extent. So, there's a longstanding tradition in Catholicism that you will find that says the greatest tool that Satan has in his arsenal is to convince you that he doesn't exist.
God bless you, because I wanted to say that to you and I couldn't remember it for the life of me. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
I'm like, how can I say that to him? And you said it exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking about when you were talking about, who taught you. And then isn't that, you nailed it. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. You're most welcome. Thank you for the question. It was very good.
Thank you. God bless
thank
you.
Thank you for calling in.
God bless.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Alrighty.
Yeah, I mean, that caller brings up a very good point. There is, we've unfortunately reached a point in our society where it's become okay to deviate from more traditional understandings And while there's some good to that, because what that does is a lot of reform comes out of, you know, the willingness to sort of break with rigid traditions and to revitalize the spirit of older systems. And so there's a good side to that, but there's also a darker side. We lose a lot when that happens. We lose our connection. And so now what we're seeing is, you know, a climate, a spiritual climate, where it's really politically incorrect to talk about the devil as a real entity. You know, it's almost, you know, it's almost becoming superstition, you know, that you're looked at as superstitious if you believe in such things. And it's really only people that work with it on a day-to-day basis. I mean, this is all I do. I would love to say that I'm performing marriages every day and baptisms and everything else. And while as a bishop, you know, as a pastor too, I do have the benefit of those wonderful moments from time to time. But the majority of my work, the most of what I do is investigating demonic attachment and liberating people from those attachments. And I can tell you without any question that the demonic is real, but it absolutely wants everybody to believe that it is just superstitious nonsense and go on and live your secular lives and don't worry about us because we're just hiding behind the scenes. And what better victim than somebody who's mentally ill that can go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist and get a diagnosis that says, oh, well, you're bipolar or you're schizophrenic or, you know, you have generalized anxiety disorder or you are manic, you know, you've got manic tendencies or what you name it, any diagnosis that you could get from a psychologist. What better disguise for a demonic entity than to hide behind those mental illnesses where it can exist indefinitely, at least for the life of that victim, under the illusion that the person's just sick. And that's a real unfortunate side to this work, because it can be very difficult, particularly in the early stages of assessment. It can be very, very difficult to determine whether or not it's just a mental medical problem or it's a actual spiritual problem. Now, through the process of assessment, we're able to root that out. And that's why having a very skilled, trained exorcist is essential. You don't want to go to just some guy who claims that, you know, he's, I don't know, studied some books from Llewellyn or, you know, bought some books from the New Age bookstore and now thinks that he's some kind of practitioner and warrior against evil. I mean, you don't want to chance it like that, because what actual practical experience has he had? But in exorcism ministry, you know, this is what we see on a day-to-day basis. We've gotten very good at it over the last 2,000 years. And, you know, that's a level of experience handed on from generation to generation that I don't think there's a system in the world that has that. Even in Buddhism, even in Islam, you know, even in some of the older religions that are out, Buddhism's older than Christianity. And even Buddhism doesn't have as formal a process of assessment and resolution that the Catholic Church has. So I don't speak from bias when I say that the Roman Catholic Church is perhaps the best place, or I should say the Catholic Church in its umbrella term, is the best place to go when you have a demonic attachment. I don't say that out of bias. I say that out of experience. I've worked with all sorts of religions, and I've never seen a system that is more effective than the one that we use.
I'm guilty of being one of the people that I'm skeptical. I don't know what to say other than that. I'm just kind of skeptical about the whole demon devil thing. Maybe it was the way I was raised. I don't know. But it's like one of those things where you have to experience it. You know, if I experienced something, that would probably change my opinion. But maybe I'm just naive and don't have my eyes open enough.
Well, it might not just be something that is relevant to your particular path on this planet. I mean, you know, most people who go about their lives are not going to necessarily be cognizant of every spiritual component that is taking place within their day-to-day operations. I mean, most of us are preoccupied with our jobs or surviving, you know, making money, taking care of our families, making sure our bosses aren't going to fire us. You know, I mean, there's all these mundane worries and concerns that sort of take over. And so we're not as keyed in spiritually as we used to be, because now in this rat race of a civilization that we've created that is very fast-paced and technologically oriented and very scientifically formulated, that we've pushed out that non-corporeal side of the universe and we're just focused on what we can see. But, you know, there's a lot more to the universe than what we can see. And science has actually proven this. You know, we have this, you know, take x-rays, for example. You know, we didn't know x-rays existed until quite recently within human civilization. And the reason for that is we can't see them. So what we can't see, we don't really pay attention to. And demons fall into that category. Until you know how to see them, until you learn how to experience them, you never will really pay too much attention to them, and it's going to feel like something else. Because generally speaking, unless you are of a spiritual proclivity, if you already have a natural ability, or you spent some time learning how to cultivate that awareness, which you would in, if you, you know, entered into priesthood, or you know, if you took up a spiritual lifestyle that is less, you know, secularized, you know, then you're going to experience your interactions with the demonic as very mundane experiences. Most of the time it's just going to be maybe impulses within yourself, that things that you don't like about yourself. Maybe, I mean, think about your own nature, Jason. You know, think about the things that you like about who you are, and I'm sure there's a list of things that you don't like about who you are. I'm sure there's dark secrets. We all have them deep inside ourselves. That are, you know, reprehensible things that we really don't like about ourselves. If you really pay attention, if you really explore, you'll see a darkness within. And some of us have really dark sides. Some of us are not so bad. But everybody has something about themselves that they don't like. And so, you know, our experience with the demonic is going to feel like it's just coming through the lens of our own just inadequacies as human beings, our human flaws. And we're not seeing the larger picture because we don't get to see the larger picture unless we know how to see the larger picture. So it doesn't surprise me, and I don't think you should feel bad if you are a skeptic, because if you're not working in the type of work where you're going to engage this at the more fundamental level, then you're never really going to experience it. And it's probably for the best that you don't, because when you get into an intimate encounter with a demon, it does not bode well for anybody. So you're probably better off just living in the skeptical world.
So Brian, what do you suggest in the first place, without, I mean, whether it's demons or just entity attachments, what do you suggest for our listeners? What can they do to help curb the attraction, or, you know, being exposed to something like that? Or is it something that we all are exposed and it's just a matter of degrees and how to deal with it? What do you suggest, Brian?
Everybody, that's a great question, Sherry. You know, everybody is vulnerable. That's the first thing I want to make clear. There is nobody that is not vulnerable to the demonic, okay? Just most of us are never going to have a serious problem. Most of us are going to be able to float under the radar, and that's probably because we're not doing something that's terribly spiritually important. Generally speaking, the people who come under demonic attack are people that have some significant spiritual operation to carry out. That is something that you're going to find pervasively across the board in all religions, and so that's number one. Number two, it can be they just were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like the one case that I'm working right now that is with a Muslim family, it's interesting because when we traced back the origin of the problem, we found that the family was actually living in Dubai at the time that the attachment began, and this individual who was a child at the time just ran off into the desert and didn't come back for a couple days. And the only thing he remembers from being out there was this dark shadow approaching him from out in the hills, and it came closer and closer, and then it enveloped him, and then he had no memory after that. But after this encounter, his family started to notice that his behavior started to degenerate into a violent and dysfunctional behaviors that eventually started to take on the characteristics of possession. And so we fully believe that he encountered a jinn while he was out there, since the Arabian deserts are full of these creatures that they call jinns. Even in Islam today, it's a carryover from before Islam. Jinns were an understanding of the cultural belief system out there long before Islam came along, but Islam adopted it. And so the demons of Islam are still considered to be jinns. And there's a very particular way that you work with jinns. You don't necessarily have to exorcise them the same way that you would with something in the Judeo-Christian context. You can usually coerce a jinn, or you can convince them to leave if you know how to work with them and you know how to speak with them. So, you know, again, it goes back to assessment. It goes back to being able to resolve the process. But that's just one example. Here's a child, you know, just a vulnerable child who just happened to go into the desert. And I don't know why he did this, but, you know, while he was there, he was a good victim, a good target, and they latched on to him. So sometimes it's because you have something spiritually significant to carry out, that God has chosen you for a particular purpose, and the demonic realm, you know, that puts a big bullseye on your back. And so they target you so that you fail. Sometimes you just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, where you become sort of like fresh meat for them to attach to and to utilize your energy for their malevolent purposes. And then sometimes it's just the result of lowering our vibrational rate to such a degree that we become more compatible with the demonic than we do with any other aspect of nature. And the demonic is a part of the creation. It's part of nature. And so, you know, I don't like talking about spiritual things as though they are supernatural things, because in a way the supernatural, or the very word supernatural, is another misnomer. It's misleading. All things are natural. Even demons and angels are part of the natural world. It's just there. It's the part of the world that we don't see, because we're not operational at that same level of vibration that they are. So it's like you have to raise your vibration to see angels, and you have to significantly lower your vibration to see demons. That's just the way it works. And most of us are operating at a homeostasis point, where all we're going to see are people. We're not going to see angels and demons. We're not going to see celestial realms. We're not going to see demonic realms. You know, it takes a lot of spiritual praxis to do that. It takes years and years of meditation to learn how to be able to perceive these things. So what my advice would be, to get back to your question, but I needed to preface with all that, my advice would be is to adopt a religious practice. You know, like I disagree with our caller, and I thought he had a brilliant question, and he sounds like a wonderful guy, but the one place that I disagree with him on is I don't feel that religion is of man. I think religion is definitely a gift that was given to us from God, and like all gifts from God, we can abuse them. So it's kind of like we have our mind, right? And our minds have been able to create wonderful technology. Now we have the ability to manufacture airplanes, and we can get on these airplanes, and in a matter of hours, we can travel around the world. That was unthinkable, you know, just a couple, you know, just a little over 100 years ago. That's unthinkable. Less than 100 years ago, you know, this was, you know, unthinkable technology. And now, through the power and faculties of the human mind, a gift from God, we now have this ability to go all over the world in a very short period of time. That's a wonderful gift. But that didn't stop a bunch of evil terrorists from hijacking a plane and flying them into the World Trade Center. That was a wonderful piece of technology, a wonderful innovation of the human spirit, was used as a weapon to kill people and change our lives forever in a negative way. And that doesn't mean the plane is evil, and that doesn't mean the plane was some horrible invention. It just means that we can take powerful gifts And we can use them in powerful ways to help people, or we can use them in powerful ways to hurt people. And religion is no different. It's a gift, no different from an airplane, a gun, an automobile. They can all be used to harm people. They can all be used as tools for survival. I mean, a gun, you know, that's a big thing for people. You know, should we own guns? Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, they do kill people. People get murdered every day because of gun use. But we can also use guns to hunt and feed our families, I mean, assuming, you know, we were in a situation where, you know, you needed to. So there's we can defend ourselves with guns. You know, I mean, imagine sending in a military, you know, sending the military into a war situation without weapons. I mean, they'd be, you know, completely devastated from the get-go. They'd lose. So, you know, there's good sides to these powerful tools, there's bad sides, and religion is a powerful tool. So my first advice would be to get a spiritual praxis, particularly one that is rooted in ancient tradition, because the further you go back to the archetypal patterns of the ancient world, the stronger those archetypes are to help you. So the more ancient the religion, the more powerful it is, but there's a caveat. The religion has to be still in use. It has to have been in continued use the whole time. So it's not good enough to just go back and say, you know what, I'm going to resurrect some reconstruction of the ancient Druids. You know, and there are people that are trying to do this. We don't have anything on the ancient Druids. We really know next to nothing about them. But yet there are people who call themselves Druids that have some type of liturgical worship process that they use, magical rites and all sorts of things that they've just invented out of their own imagination. Those don't have much power. That doesn't mean they don't have any power. It just means they don't have the historical archetypal connection that is necessary to really protect themselves and others with it. So today, in our modern world, the best choices you've got are Buddhism and Christianity. Those are the best ones. And then a close third, or I should say a close second, if Buddhism and Christianity are tied, I would say a close second would be Hinduism. And then after that, you start to fall further and further away from the stronger archetypes, and they're not as powerful. So the first thing I would say is get a praxis going and be devoted to it. Develop a relationship with God. If you're a Catholic or a Christian, get to the sacraments of the church. If you're not baptized, get baptized. If you are baptized, start going to church and receive the Eucharist. Make appeal to those sacraments that the church has, because those empower us with ancient archetypal resonances that raise our vibration to more celestial realms and make us less compatible with the demonic. And the higher we raise our vibration, the less compatible the demonic is with us, and they can't touch us eventually. And that's exactly how I do my work. Because if I did not constantly raise my vibration, working in the demonic all the time, I would be consumed by it. And there are many exorcists that do get consumed by it. And it's only through dedication to the religious practices that the church gives us, the wonderful graces that are contained within those sacraments, that I'm able to do this work pretty much unscathed, although I still do get hurt. Every exorcism, I do get attacked in every exorcism. It's just I'm able to heal very quickly, and it has no long-lasting effects. The other thing that they can do is buy, and I tell this to everyone, and this is a very simple thing you can do, buy a Himalayan salt lamp, but make sure it's a genuine one, and leave it on all the time, and get the biggest one you can afford. And if you can't afford it, put them in every room. And Himalayan salt, with its ability to put out the right kind of ions in your atmosphere to absorb the types of negative energy that is associated with the demonic, will act as a purifying force to further protect you. But there is no substitute for having a genuine, dedicated relationship with God. Without that, nothing else really works.
So I'm looking at the clock, and boy, time flies by. And so real quick, now, if somebody wants to contact you or has questions for you, is there a way to contact you?
Absolutely. They can go to esotericcatholic.org. That's esotericcatholic.org. And then there is all the contact information on there. We have a lot of resources on that site. If you feel that you have a demonic attachment or any type of paranormal problem and you are in the Atlanta area, you can fill out our intake form there. If you're outside the Atlanta, Georgia area, then you can go to the orderofexorcists.com, and they have an intake form for all of the other jurisdictions. And that's a good way to get help and help with people who are very experienced and know what they're doing.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you. We are out of time. I want to thank you for coming on the show once again. We'll have to get you back on. I mean, it's like we just scratched the surface, and there's so much negativity
yeah,
out there. And while I'm skeptical about the whole thing, I'm not 100% naive, so that's why I don't dabble in the occult or anything like that. Although I am guilty of watching horror movies, but that's the extent of my, so.
Well, you and me both. You and me both. I love them too.
But, so I want to thank you for coming on again, and it's been enlightening, and thanks again. Do you have anything else to share?
Yes, it's always
absolutely
a pleasure to have you, Brian. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Anytime, Sherry. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Take care,
all
Jason.
Right.
I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. Bye. You too.
Wow, that hour has gone by so fast. He's just a wealth of information just to share, and it's amazing. I just enjoy hearing him and just learning a lot from him. So it's just awesome.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite subjects. I'm skeptical, but I like, you know, hearing about
you
it.
Get...
And, what's
oh,
that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, next week, excuse me, Jason, we're going to have open lines. So we're just going to go talk about random things. And if anybody would like to call and, you know, if you want to do a reading, get a reading done. If you have any questions that needs to be addressed, yes, some concern or some answers, yes, I'd be happy to help and help you, guide you and that kind of thing. Yes, that would be awesome, but don't try and test me. That's all I ask.
So you're going to be taking readings if somebody wants. You're going to be taking readings if somebody wants a reading from you?
If somebody wants a reading, I'd be happy to do that. Would love to. I do it out of love and being able to give back. And, you know, if anybody would like to have any questions or would like to get some answers or, you know, whatever, I'm going to be taking some calls. So in the meantime, we're going to just kind of shoot the breeze next week until if anybody calls, and we'll see what happens.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, I want to thank our guests for coming on tonight and our caller from calling in all the way from Canada, which Canada's not that far from us, but it's always awesome to get callers. We need to start pushing that more, and that's a great opportunity to do that is open line. So
isn't that great? And
yeah,
then in two weeks from now, we're going to have Cindy Bailey Dove. She is very much into drones, and we're going to talk about paranormal, just probably paranormal things. So instead of talking about drones like she did probably, what, 5-6 months ago, we're going to have her back, and we're going to discuss something different. So anyway, Cindy Bailey Dove will be back on our show in 2 weeks, so stay tuned.
Awesome. Well, with that, I guess we'll close the show. Once again, I want to thank everybody, and we'll be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, and hope everybody has a outstanding week. And with that, I will bid everybody adieu, and have a great week, everyone.
Take care. Peace, everybody.